What's up, what's up? Welcome back to the 48th episode of Cinematic Minds. In this captivating installment, we're diving into the influential 1992 film, Malcolm X, and celebrating the remarkable film career of the talented actor, Delroy Lindo. Get ready for an enlightening discussion that explores the life and legacy of Malcolm X as portrayed on screen and the impressive performances of Delroy Lindo. Hosted by us, the trio of brothers, Ed, Theo, and Malcolm Hollingsworth, we're thrilled to explore the profound impact of Malcolm X and the incredible talent of Delroy Lindo. Before we delve into Delroy Lindo's filmography, let's take a moment to appreciate Malcolm X. Directed by Spike Lee, this film is a monumental biopic that delves deep into the life of one of the most influential figures in American history. Prepare for a deep dive into the cinematic masterpiece. As always, a quick reminder. We are a spoiler zone podcast, so be warned that we will discuss the entire plot of Malcolm X. All right, let's get started. For those of you who have been with us through the first 47 episodes, we thank you for returning. For those of you who are listening for the very first time, we hope you enjoy the ride. Now sit back and relax and enjoy these cool sounds provided by our musical curator, my bruh, DJ Chuck D.
These are the questions you and I have to ask. How did we get this mind? You're not an American. You're an African who happens to be an American. You have to understand the difference. We didn't come over on the Nita, the Pinta, and the whatchamacallit. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Landed right on top of us.
Hey, what's up? What's up? What's up? Welcome back. Even though it's probably been a week for y'all out there, it's been at least a month, over a month, since the last of us three reconvened. Malcolm, congratulations. You and Elaine, you know, you saw the text, I was calling her a little young Scarlett Johansson, got married. Got married. Congratulations. And you just came back from your honeymoon.
Thanks, brother. But
yeah. Thank you, bro. Yeah, man, we got some great times. And just to kind of let everyone know who we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about Malcolm X. It's a favorite of mine. Quick note out there, folks may not notice, but the next movie sequentially in Spike Lee joins should be Jungle Fever, but for some reason, which I guess I could have Googled that more, Jungle Fever is like not streaming anywhere.
Curious, crazy.
Though, yeah, I'm curious though. Do either y'all have a DVD, or am I the only maybe to Theo's point earlier?
I got a DVD player.
No, but do you have a Jungle Fever DVD?
Oh no, I don't have the DVD.
No. he's like Ed. I'm 28.
Man, I got a DVD player though, so I guess.
No, I can do that. Do you have a Jungle Fever DVD?
Me?
I'm the only one. All right. So
I don't have any DVDs.
All right, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I do, but I don't think all of us have it. But there's no complaints there. Even though I would have loved to talk about and listen to the Jungle Fever soundtrack, for any of y'all who are not familiar with the Jungle Fever soundtrack, I highly recommend you check it on out. The entire soundtrack is by Stevie Wonder. It's a great one. I loved it. But to the brass tacks, we are here this evening to talk about Malcolm X. This is a favorite one. I don't know how it is for y'all's, but let's just kind of start off by giving an overview of the film. As described, this is a biographical epic of the controversial and influential Black nationalist leader, from his early life and career as a small-time gangster to his ministry as a member of the Nation of Islam and his eventual assassination. This film came out in 1992. It was rated PG-13. I was surprised about that. I don't know. This is like one of only Spike Lee's only movies that isn't rated R. I just
I don't think anybody's having sex in it.
I mean, a pretty full on graphic murder.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie. So yeah, they didn't have sex, but cocaine, a lot of murders. I don't know. He talks about some stuff. So yeah. But yeah, it was PG-13, 3 hours and 22 minutes. Directed. Man, long as fuck. Bro, I knew that. Look, I predict this. Yeah. And maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of know your routine. You'd be like, yeah, on Monday, I kind of half watched the movie and I work. And I bet you was like, dude, 3+? Nah, bro.
Well, yeah, what happened was I wasn't going to have any other time to watch it. So I started it in the middle of like the workday yesterday. And then I didn't finish it to the end of the workday today. Cause it took a minute to get through. I was watching it in between meetings, but yeah, that shit's long, dude. So
yeah.
And I was watching the Monday night game yesterday. So otherwise I would have watched it yesterday, but yeah, dude.
Yeah, I kinda work watch this one. I've seen it enough.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had really focused in on it, I probably would have had more takes than I'll have in this episode. Cause like I was like, I've definitely seen this one. I can get it by just kind of work watching it. But even as I was work watching it, I was like, I don't remember the first half of it before it goes bad. I don't remember like all the detail they go into. Like the bad part is though. Sorry, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Come on,
the bad part is the part before he's like Malcolm X, before he like goes all Muslim, is kind of the more enjoyable
part. Yeah, it's a lot more entertaining.
And it's like kind of like both kind of going up. It's like when he's Detroit Red, right? He's got like the whole Harlem thing. He's got the prison thing. He's got like the dance scene with Shorty. Then he's dating old gal. Oh, you know what? Let's go back to my bed. How about I go to the movie overview? Yeah.
Right.
So it was written, and I found this out in the research. So it was obviously based upon the autobiography of Malcolm X, which was written by, written by Alex Haley. He was a professor at the University of Tennessee. Go shout out my Vols. Hopefully we're going to beat Florida this weekend. Fun fact on Alex
Haley. Looks like it.
Yeah, when he was a professor at University of Tennessee, he used to host a picnic for all the African American students at the University of Tennessee. It was written by Spike Lee as well. Again, Malcolm X, and Arnold Pearl was credited. However, in the research, I also found out that one of the other uncredited screenplay writers was James Baldwin. But there are some changes that were made, and James Baldwin's estate were like, no, we want the name removed from it. Because interestingly enough, the James Baldwin script was, I think, called Things That I Forgot. And it was about, and it was like Malcolm X talking to somebody while he was driving to the Audubon Theater about memories from his life. So it was kind of like they took like very, I mean, honestly, if you ask me, I think Theo's read the autobiography of Malcolm X. Correct me if I'm wrong, Theo, but it seems like they kind of took a little bit from the Alex Haley autobiography of Malcolm X with the kind of vignettes of kind of like looking back on his life. However, they did it in sequential order. So cast, before we go into first impressions, I think it's a great cast. Denzel Washington. We're going to talk about him. I know I am, but Denzel Washington is Malcolm X. I feel like he embodies Malcolm X. Angela Bassett is Betty Shabazz. Come on, what about that as a 1-2 punch? Denzel and Angela Bassett? I don't even think they did that many films together, but like, wow. Delroy Lindo. All right, I'm going to already get ahead to it. Yo, in the research, I found out that Spike Lee wanted Samuel L. for this role. I love Delroy Lindo in this.
Who did Delroy Lindo play? Oh, wait. Oh, yeah.
The dude, okay. The gangster guy. Oh, man, I should say his name. West Indian Archie.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a whole other storyline. It's like there was like so many different like vignettes in his life and stuff. Yeah. Spike Lee is Shorty. I like Spike Lee in this. Like, sometimes, like, he started getting on my nerves a little bit in some of his acting roles after this, but I enjoyed him in this. Albert Hall as Baines. Al Freeman Jr. as Elijah Muhammad. Looking exactly like Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah.
Teresa Randall as Laura.
Oh, yeah. Also, Al Freeman was a professor at Howard University.
Was he?
In the acting program, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Who else we got? I guess Kate Vernon as Sophia, which, man, we're talking about Sophia. They made her seem evil. She scared me. Think that's about...
I got some more, yo. I got some more.
Debbie Mazar from Peg. I'm sorry, Debbie Mazar, which I thought was kind of random. We got Phyllis Yvonne Stickman. Joe Seneca. Again, we'll talk about him. I listened to our pod. We were talking about him in School Days. I was listening to that because I'm about to publish that and stuff. We were talking about him in, Robert Guinevere as Rudy. And I don't remember, was Giancarlo Esposito? I don't remember him.
Yeah, he was.
That's one of the things I was like, wait, not only was he in this, but he was like one of the main dudes who murders Malcolm X in this. I'm like, good God. Giancarlo Esposito, except for School Days, I don't remember him in anything until Breaking Bad. He's in all these other movies.
Between him and light-skinned dude, Robert Guinevere Smith, it's like, Bill Nunn, it was kind of like his repertoire. You know what I mean? The Spike Lee repertoire, repertoire thing. I guess
we're going to first person. Can I drop
some? Yeah, of course. Drop it when you want, man. Right. Yeah, it's
back. So you got the big named actors out of the way. A couple of other ones that I have to drop now. Really cool one. John David Washington, a.k.a. Denzel Washington's son. He was just a random student in Harlem in the film. Makes sense. It's like, hey, my son wants to be, we need some kid actors. Can he be in it? He was a kid at the time. So that's cool. Other more random ones. Freaking the Black Power Ranger, a.k.a. Walter Emmanuel Jones, plays a barbershop customer.
From House Party?
He was in the new House Party, too. Yeah, he's playing a barbershop customer. That reminds me of, like, who was it in Coming to America that was, like, in the chair? Cuba Gooding Jr.? He's kind of like that, just like barbershop customer. And then this one I need to... Sometimes Google just be mixing people up, but I don't know. Apparently, Bill Goldberg plays a John in it. Now, Bill Goldberg, if this is the right Bill Goldberg, is Goldberg the fucking wrestler? So, I gotta fact check that one, because I don't know. I'm sure there's a bunch of Bill Goldberg out there, and maybe Google's algorithms are random, but that was another fun one. And then one I have to call out, it seemed like he got Nelson Mandela.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
That was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And Malcolm was like, I ain't saying by any means necessary.
Right.
I ain't trying to get assassinated. I already been in jail for 30 years.
Right. But it was weird because they didn't even like, I don't know. It felt like they just were like, hey, Nelson Mandela, we're just going to have you play like a teacher in his school talking to the students about Malcolm X. It's like, I don't know. It's just like, why? If you're going to use Nelson Mandela, like, just have him be Nelson Mandela in your movie. That's enough of a flex. You don't have to, like, make him into, like, a high school teacher. Like, oh, I wonder who that guy is. Like, nah, dude, you got him. those are the biggest ones that I saw that were just random as hell. There's other people that are mentioned in here, like Magic Johnson and Jackie Robinson, but I'm like, maybe those were just like, I don't know about Magic Johnson. I feel like they probably have like a list of executive producers that were also.
That's exactly what it was. So long story short, he had trouble with the financing, and when he had trouble with the financing, Francis Ford Coppola kind of gave him some advice. He was just like, hey, man, just start raising funds. And back in the day, like, especially the way he started promoting She's Gotta Have It, he was just start selling T-shirts. So, Theo, I remember you remember vividly at that time, because I feel like we dress up in that way. He was selling the X hats and the X T-shirts. And that right there was helping get a lot of financing. Denzel Washington gave up his entire salary. Spike Lee did as well. And did this movie for free. And they financed it. Yeah. Yeah, Denzel. Yeah, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Oprah Winfrey. So it was like a whole real big thing and stuff. So yeah, they're executive producers. Something that I thought was random, I saw like, okay, you may find this interesting, Theo. So when there's the preach, when he's up there on the ladders, I always immediately and still now always can recognize Al Sharpton. You know what I found out now for just this first time who that other preacher was?
Who?
Bobby Seale.
Oh, really? The Black Panther. Oh, nice.
That's the exact other time I thought it was like an actor, because it's like, oh, yo, and this and that. And I'm like, wait. That was one of the Black Panther founders? So yeah, it was freaking Bobby Seale.
Hmm. Nice. Oh.
Michael Imperioli was in this too.
Michael, who's that?
Chris from The Sopranos.
So Eddie has left the room now. Also, for our podcast listeners, Eddie has a tendency to not edit out the long gaps inside of shit. So I just this entire transition will be inside of the final version.
Hey, y'all saw that?
Yeah. Yo, Ed, no, I was saying that Michael Imperioli was in this for a hot minute.
I saw some weird research, and I don't know if it was true or not, but it was like Ashanti, this is what her film debut was. And I was like, that's weird. I'm referring this. And then like the next fact was like, no, Ashanti's film debut was indeed not Coach Carter. It was this.
Okay. And no one cares.
All right. So who would like to start off with first impressions? Or who feels like they probably did some? Yeah. You recall anything like that? Or do you remember really seeing this? Or actually, maybe y'all don't have much on this because y'all just probably remember watching this your entire time growing up. Does that not really apply? Or
yeah, I mean, I don't remember my first time seeing it. But I'm just noticing Michael Imperioli's been in a bunch of Spike Lee joints. He's been in Jungle Fever, Girl Six, Clockers. But I don't know. This is the first time watching it in a while. I think that this may be my first time finishing it just because it's so long. I feel like I've seen the beginning a bunch of different times and then just not been able to hang in there all the way to the end, because I think after he goes to jail and gets out of jail, it starts to get a little dry in my opinion. But because I don't know, it's just interesting. I think that the timeline of things are a little bit hard to follow, like when it's been like, you know, a few months versus been a few years,
right?
In this, so yeah, whenever
it's like they're like, dating, like, one scene, really, and then next scene they have like four kids,
right.
And I don't know, I just feel like that's kind of also been like a theme across all these Spike Lee films that we've been watching. It's like the first half or the first three quarters of the movie will be like very well thought out, very well paced. And then like the last like chunk of the movie, they just start yada yada yadaing things and like just being like, all right, cool, let's wrap this shit up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that, and like, which is weird to do with like a movie like this, because like, you know, I felt like Spike Lee's objective of this was to draw attention to and kind of call out, like, you know, the positive impact that Malcolm X has had on the Black, you know, community, and, you know, all of us like today. So to kind of like not have that as well, like, you know, paced and detailed as the beginning where he's like, you know, just like a gangster, just seems kind of interesting because, like, I don't know, like, I was just, when I was watching this, I was kind of just thinking, like, damn, Malcolm X was kind of a shitty dude, like, until like the last like 20 minutes, it seemed kind of redeeming. So
the last 20 minutes? No.
He's a pretty good guy after he peeled his jail.
Is that too much or too little?
I think no. I mean,
too little. I think.
I think more after he got off jail, man.
And I kind of started to.
Yeah. Now he did really hate white.
Afterwards. Yeah, probably like the last.
But I think he was kind of misplaced by Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Well, I felt like the turning point in my mind where I'm like, oh, he started to be a good dude is whenever he was like, yeah, Honorable Elijah Muhammad's on that bullshit. And then, you know,
he got like five Halle Berry's pregnant.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I see it from that standpoint. But like, I don't know. Like, I think that there's some maybe I guess I'm mixing morality and just like intelligence and discipline, because he becomes, I mean, like, yeah, he's always intelligent, but like he really starts exerting his intelligence through his like speeches, mm-hmm, and his discipline through like just how disciplined you have to be like in the black, the, you know, Nation of Islam, mm-hmm, after he gets out of jail. So I'm like, okay, that's a turning point. But yeah, like,
yeah,
he's still a problematic, he's still got problematic stuff. Like, until he's finally like, okay, like, maybe Elijah Muhammad. Then he, like, actually goes to, like, Islam himself and, like learns about it himself and stops just, mm-hmm, like, you know, looking up to Elijah Muhammad. So I could see that. I could see that. But either way, that first act is still the most fun. I mean, it's just like,
yeah,
you want to see a movie about, like, a good guy? Or you want to see like a movie about like a you know, like a character who gets into crazy circumstances. Like, I want to see crazy circumstances. So
right,
yeah, I don't know. It was a lot of the movie that was wild, but yeah, pacing wise too, I think you got a point, and I see that that's Spike Lee problem. But now working in the movie industry and like seeing how we're like addressing, like, you know, we split the movie generally into like three acts, first act, second act, third act. But I just feel like there's so much energy and there's so much like, we got to get this right placed on that first act, and so much analysis and so much story revision. And then it's like, at some point a producer comes in and they're like, guys, if you guys keep going at this fucking pace, then you're not going to be able to get this movie done on time. So, mm-hmm, like, I appreciate all that thought that you put into the first act, but we got to get this shit done. So you can't do that for the other, you got to finish this movie. And then by the end, yeah, like, oh, shit, all right, we got 2 weeks left. Let's just keep moving. And I feel like that's, yeah, like Spike Lee for sure. It's like, all right, we just got to, mm-hmm, get done. Start.
That's some good perspective for sure.
We don't got any more money.
Right.
We're literally having to sell shirts and hats. Right. I had to go to Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson. I had to go to Magic Johnson and get $2,000.
Right. Yeah, if we're going with that, like, you know, all these sponsors, it does look like there's a hell of sponsors, like Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali, Bill Cosby, Janet Jackson. They all look like they were sponsors on this.
Right.
It was a whole thing. You remember, like, everybody, I don't know, do you remember, Theo? Because you were like, wait, dang, five. So sometimes I'll be honest, dude. I'd be like, because whatever. At the time in 92, I remember being like, how can I say this? Like, you're like my peer. Mm-hmm. So I remember like having convos with you and us being very present. But then now in hindsight, I'm like, you're five. Did you really know what was going on?
No, like, no, not at all. Like,
yeah, stuff gets like foggy for me, but like, but pretty much before five. It's tough for me stuff before five. Well, what about you? I'm sorry, did you have any more first thoughts or initial impressions on this?
Nah, nope.
What about
I don't remember the first time I saw it. I thought at this point I had seen it enough to know all the stuff, but like just seeing it again, I was still seeing new things. I definitely really enjoyed reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. I read that years after I'd seen this. And it's like, yeah, I mean, honestly, at this point, like, I don't want this to be redone, but like if it needed to be redone again, I would love it to be like a series. Because then you could, it's just like, I want to see all of the shit that they just don't really have time to show. I think they do a good job of showing a lot of stuff. But yeah, then it's like reading the book gives you a lot more insight into like that breakdown between Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam that they kind of just had to like fly through. And I didn't really get, you know, without having the more of an insight from reading the autobiography. So I think it's worth definitely reading that. That's gonna help to connect a lot of the pieces for you. Yeah. So I don't know. My first impression, it's a great movie, and it's like honestly, like I, in my mind now, I'm starting to I don't know who is on my radar first, Malcolm X or Martin Luther King. I think for most of the world, at least most Americans, Martin Luther King is far and beyond the civil rights leader that most people know about. But like this movie and my early introduction of it has always made Malcolm X, my knowledge of my awareness of Malcolm X always be at the same level. So it was surprising to me in elementary school, middle school, that like my classmates most of them don't even know who Malcolm X was. And yeah, like I see them both as being like dope, but I don't know. Like, it's kind of like the other thing that I appreciate about this and why I think Malcolm X is probably like a more interesting movie than Martin Luther King is because I love a movie with a problematic person. And it's like a Martin Luther King movie would be like a Stevie Wonder movie where it's just like, this nigga's just won his whole life and he's been good.
There's like several made for TV or whatever. Like, you know what though? I do like Selma.
Selma's right. Good, but that's
I feel like they go a different way about it though.
Right. They just show it's a scene starring Martin.
Kind of like you lose the battle pretty much. Life. It's kind of like the night we got our ass beat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know what I mean? It's not like it's not the march. Right. I'll see that dark, whatever, that movie, yeah. But, yeah, the night we got our ass beat, okay.
Right.
But, yeah.
I think at the end of the day, there's this idea in film called the hero's journey. And it's so nice whenever a real human's life actually follows, like, that hero's journey and has those tentpole moments. So it feels like Malcolm X more than any other, like, civil rights activist that I can think of has a life that actually mimics naturally that story arc of the hero's journey. So it's like, yeah, it's the perfect historical biography in my mind. Like everything that I think of when I think of an autobiography, it has to like go back to this. That and Ray. Like Ray yeah. too. That, which is like very similar because it's like, wait, I always thought of Ray as a nice old Pepsi or Dr. Pepper dude or whatever. But yeah, seeing Ray, I was like, oh shit, this nigga was on Heron.
And then also, you cannot leave your lady around Ray because
right.
Ray.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Uh oh. Yeah. Ray got his eyes on another one.
Yeah.
Or he's got his arms wrapped around another girl's arm.
Right.
Hands around another girl's arm. Wrist.
Yeah,
well, I thought that was I think that was real how you put that though about his arc and his journey. I was reading Roger Ebert's review, and he kind of had that similar statement that you said. Roger Ebert says specifically he was like, Malcolm X's story can show the power of one's ability to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't know, like one's ability to change themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other initial thoughts or no? I kind of shared a lot.
No, I think, I mean, that's my initial thought on it. It's just like
very. So am I tripping? I kind of recall sometimes, like, all right, actually, I very much remember this. And again, maybe you do or do not remember. So, like, in the 90s, before internet, all right, if we were bored at home, we'd watch TV or HBO. And then we had our VHS tapes. And we had, like, all the Spike Lee Jones. And I don't know if you remember, but I feel like I'd be like, all right, which one of these? You know what I mean? And it'd be, and this would be, I would say this would be in the rotation, but this was in the rotation. So I feel like the most I grew watched this was like, we would just be like, all right, we're going to watch. All right, let's just put this on it. It's another day. Do you recall doing that with me a lot? Because I feel like you were with me, but you probably don't remember. You're too young. I don't know.
No.
All right. So I vividly remember this like yesterday. I remember when the movie was about to be coming on out. So the way I knew about Malcolm X was from when I would go down to New York City and we would go down to Jamaica Ave, I'd see people with like Bob Marley and Malcolm X shirts. That's how I found out about Bob Marley and Malcolm X, because when we go to New York City, I'd see those folks. They didn't talk about Bob Marley in school or Malcolm X in school. And I didn't see him on TV or nothing like that. Spike Lee, Denzel, right? Again, at this time, Spike Lee was Spike. Right. So he was already huge. After Do the Right Thing, he was huge. Also at this time, Denzel, he was huge. He already won his Oscar for Glory. He'd been nominated a couple times. He had Ricochet. I mean, he was an A-lister and stuff. I mean, A-lister, right? Huge star. So a movie about Malcolm X that was supposed to be coming out for a while, ever since 1968, people have been trying to get it, and Malcolm X is controversial. Norm Jewison, a white dude, was supposed to direct it, and then folks was like, man, we can't get a white dude to direct Malcolm X. We got pushback, he ain't doing it. So Spike got it. So Spike Lee, Denzel, and a Malcolm X movie, and then everyone's wearing X hats. Like, it was a thing, right? So everyone was looking forward to it. So when I played for Hendersonville Hurricanes, we had like a banquet at the end of the season. And I think I was in fourth grade and we're on the Triple B team. And I remember me, Ma, and Dad were looking forward to it so much. Theo did too, but you're just too young. I don't know. Or actually, maybe you didn't. Just, and they definitely weren't. We lived in Hendersonville at the time. They definitely weren't showing Malcolm X at Indian Lake Cinema. So we had to go see it at the Madison Movie Theater. And I remember after the banquet, me and our black friends who were on the football team, we all went to the movie theaters together and our parents to go see Malcolm X. And the movie theater was packed. I have never before or after, no, only one time after is when me and Theo saw Jurassic Park. But the only time before or after I've been to a movie theater that's ever been this packed where people were standing up like in the back of the theater was this. So Ma and Dad did not sit down. They were standing up in the back of the theater, and me and Theo sat down in seats like up in the front.
What? Again, that's crazy.
Ma and Dad were standing up and did not sit down.
Did they people not sell it by seat? Like, huh? Back then, did they not sell it? The tickets.
It wasn't assigned. Like, first of all, assigned seats is like, if you ask me, that's like a past 5-10 years thing. But shoot, Indian Lake Cinema. Actually, the majority of my life, the first 30 years of my life, it was just kind of like general seating, right? And I don't know. It was, how you say this? It was a Madison movie theater. It was a black movie theater, right? So I don't think it was even regulated. And you know what? It was Malcolm X. So weird. Yeah. It was like the weirdest thing. I've never been experienced like that. So I remember seeing it. I remember being really young and being like, one, this movie's cool. I don't get half the stuff that's going on. This movie's long as hell, but I was like, this is cool, right? And then also I was just kind of like, I also remember the two of you like, dude, I remember I was like, I guess I was so young, I was like, is this guy Malcolm X? It was a weird thing. I was like, I could, or not even that, it was just kind of like, if you put a picture up in front of me and been like, is it which one's Malcolm X? And it would have been Denzel, the real Malcolm X, I probably wouldn't have known and stuff. I was just like, looks like him and stuff. That was a great movie. So I guess I'll fast forward to the rewatch. Upon the rewatch, I grew up watching this all the time. growing up, reflecting, the older I get with this, I think, and maybe I'm saying this too much, maybe about like Spike Lee movies, but this one in particular, I think this is one of my favorite movies of all time. I love this movie. Maybe I'm in an emotional state, but the older I get, the more I understand this movie, the more I enjoy this movie, the more I appreciate this movie. I think it's great. I've been looking forward to rewatching. I've been looking forward to talking about it. It's one of my favorite movies. I think I wrote here, I think it's one of the best works of art and cinematic history. I think it's one of the best works in African-American history. I think it's one of the best pieces of art in American history. I think it's such a great movie. I think it's Denzel killing it. I think it's Denzel's best performance. I think he's killing it.
It's definitely better than Devil in a Blue Dress, I'll tell you that much.
But you know what, though? I mean, I think it's better than that cop movie when he was like, you know, King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Oh, that's my favorite Denzel movie, honestly. I love that one. That was great.
Trade so Day. Great in it. Yeah, and you know what, though? Let's just say that maybe we're at similar ages in life, right, though?
Yeah, and actually, so- Equalizer is my favorite Denzel movie. Never mind, but.
Either way,
I think not in Temptations. Remember the Titans or whatever. Remember the Titans. Okay.
He's got so many, though.
Yeah.
He's got so many. So, and again, didn't win an Oscar, got robbed. Got robbed for this and stuff.
What won Best Picture that year?
I don't know what won Best Picture.
Oh.
I don't know what won Best Picture.
I'm sure.
Maybe Silence of the Lambs.
I don't think that should have beat Malcolm X.
You putting that up, Malin?
Yeah. Silence of the Lambs. Good call.
I mean, all right, don't tell me. Because I think they swept that year. So I think Jonathan Demme won for Best Director. Anthony Hopkins won for Actor. And did Old Gal win for Actress? Am I tripping?
Yep. Best Actress. Jodie Foster. Best Actor, Anthony Hopkins. Yep. Best
Sound and Director, mixing. Jonathan Demme.
Yeah.
I was wrong with Director.
I don't see anything about the director. I only see Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster.
That's racist, bro. That shit is ridiculous. Like, movie. And, like, I'm honestly kind of thinking, like, I don't know. Like, this movie was actually, like, I don't know. I'm sure they had all these executive producers and stuff. But, like, even if they had just gone through the studio route and gotten, like, an appropriate, like, a budget, it would not have been as big as this shit was. Like, they had so many scenes with thousands of people in it. I was like, this is crazy. Like, y'all are just, like, over the top. Like, like that shit was, like, I don't know. Like, this.
I will admit this. I remember the first time seeing it. I like when the opening scene, when they're in like Harlem, because that's the last fucking thing I was expecting. It's like, you know what I mean? They got like the zoot suits and stuff and the hair thing. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. I thought they had some pretty cool aerial shots. So maybe some of the things I would say. One, I'll split up the shots and the partnership. So again, sometimes I compare this. I say, like, I love Snoop and Dre together. I love Peanut Butter and Jelly. Because when they're together, man, they're so great. Separate, they all right. But man, Snoop and Dre, Peanut Butter and Jelly. That's how I feel about Denzel and Spike. And I pray, and I think it's going to happen. I want to see another Denzel and Spike partnership. I love Denzel and Spike. I think that's like my favorite director, actor combo. And again, I feel like they're in their bag in this. I feel like both of them in their bag. Because, I don't know, I really like focusing on this part of Spike Lee too. Because in my humble opinion, Jonathan Demme, good looks. All right. It's just recently us like watching and dissecting and reviewing and critiquing She's Gotta Have It and the quality of that and School Days. And now seeing like where him and Ernest Dickerson definitely got calls out Ernest Dickerson, but like where they came from, like the quality and the visual styles from like that to this. I think it's such great seeing that growth, right there. Which, if you're going to compare to like him compared to like the next 5 to 10 years following that, it's not as much difference and stuff. But you can see that significant growth of like the next different quality steps and stuff. So that was pretty cool. Last thing, maybe I want to start suggesting, would y'all ever be cool with this if another kind of topic or category to bring out is like, what's your best shot? What's your favorite shot? Because there was three in particular that I specifically want to call one out. And again, I used to think that when I was growing on up, when I wasn't familiar with filmmaking, I was like, oh, Spike Lee's director. So he's the one kind of like choosing all these visuals. No, but the more I'm familiar, it was like, no. Spike Lee is kind of like, yeah, he's over that a little bit, but it was really his cinematographer, Ernest Dickerson. So three shots I liked in particular was one, y'all may or may not remember, and if y'all are half watching it, there's a shot of him, there's a shot of Denzel and Angela Bassett, and it's kind of like in silhouette when they're like, it's just like them, like they're really close, and it's like a white background, and they both got on black. It's a particular shot, but it's when, like, they're like talking and stuff. I don't know. So I don't know if I'm describing that really well, but I thought that was a pretty cool shot. I thought the Mecca shots were beautiful. And then some other shots I thought that were pretty beautiful as well, too, is like when he was doing his speeches, especially like sometimes the big auditoriums, it would just be excellent visuals because, first of all, they do like a close up shot and he'd have like all that grand, like Nation of Islam stuff behind him. And then they get big, they show the entire place and you see like all the ladies and they're white. And it would just seem like very, you know, like just very ornate and stuff. And it was like pretty powerful with the colors and stuff. So I don't know if you're half watching that. Maybe that wouldn't be the best category to recommend, but I thought that. I will say this. I think when I was very young, that was the first impression I had with it. And something that still sticks with me is, man, A-plus performance from Denzel, A-plus storytelling. But the visuals, I think maybe that's something that doesn't really get mentioned that much. Great cast, great storytelling, but I think it's some very, 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 very powerful visuals. And great music, right? I think we did a lot. Maybe I did too much on talking about initial thoughts, but again, I love this movie and I'm enjoying it more and more and more. Who would like to kick things on off of kind of discussing any kind of favorite scenes or performances in particular?
My favorite scene, the scene that tripped me out the most is whenever they're about to do that, that heist, Shorty, Malcolm X and their two girlfriends. And like they're recruiting a driver and they recruit Roger Guinevere Smith's character, and like Malcolm X is just like giving him a hard time. They're playing Russian roulette and shit. I don't fucking know what's going on in that scene, and maybe you can explain, or one of you guys can explain what was going on in that shit, but I mean, that was the most memorable scene in the movie, in my opinion. That shit was crazy. I was not ready for it. And I was like, damn, Malcolm X is a wild dude. So
I have some
thoughts on that
scene. Yeah, you got any thoughts, Theo? I can share, but do you have any you want to share, Theo?
No, what did you say? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Did you hear what he just described, or did you say if you didn't hear what I said? Oh, look, then I'll address it then. All right. Yeah. Look, Malcolm was talking about this the Russian roulette scene. All right. And Malcolm was like, what the fuck was going on there? So my opinion is this. I thought it was simple. It was a dick measuring contest. So it was. So, and Malcolm's crazy. It's kind of that. It was two things. Well, Malcolm's crazy, and it was a dick measuring contest. So, like, when the dude was like, yeah, man, we can do this. And then, like, Malcolm was like, oh, yeah. Oh, man, so they got a whole bunch of stuff in there. And light-skinned dude was like, man, who the fuck is this guy? And, like, and so Malcolm didn't like that. So since, like, Malcolm was crazy and he was like, oh, you trying to show me up in front of my girl? Then he was like, let's do Russian roulette. But then he's crazy, but then also he didn't really do it. So is he crazy or is he crazy like a fox? So that's my thought. Gotcha. It's like, is he crazy or is he crazy like a fox? What you think about it?
Right.
Or you don't think anything at all?
Me? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, I think it was, just like you said. Like, I don't know. It was just like him kind of feeling challenged. I remember that scene. It didn't really bump for me. I was just like, all right, this is some more crazy shit that's going on.
Yeah. Yo, did Roger Guinevere Smith come back into the movie?
No, it's like his only part in the entire movie.
Yeah, that shit was weird. I don't know. That one stuck in my head the most when I was watching it. But
all right, so random. I've been listening to a podcast talk about Vietnam movies. They had me watching Full Metal Jacket the other week. And have any of y'all heard of or have any of y'all seen the movie The Deer Hunter with Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken?
No.
No, I don't think so.
So I've never seen it. It's kind of like the most famous, like, well, that platoon in Apocalypse Now are like the three Vietnam movies. Deer Hunter's on Netflix, but long story short, it has like the like most famous Russian blitzing. Like it kind of. So if you haven't seen Deer Hunter, I guess I was kind of like, I feel like it was kind of like, I feel like whatchamacallit kind of stole it. I don't say stole that, but kind of got it from Deer Hunter a little bit and stuff. But if you haven't seen Deer Hunter, I don't think it really resonates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. It was like Vietnamese, like Russian roulette scene or some shit.
You've probably seen it, yeah. I mean, how can I say? I mean, if you're a cinephile or if you're a film student, it's kind of like you've probably seen references to it and stuff. It's usually on like the AF. I mean, you've heard it, right? It's like usually on like the America's Film Institute top 100 list of like the top like 30 movies of all time and stuff. But
it's kind of, this shit looks dope. It's got Robert De Niro.
All right.
It looked like they acted crazy in it.
Here's the premise of the movie. So here's the premise. Oh, and Meryl Streep. And a young Meryl Streep. Oh, and Fredo.
Damn.
And it was like it's like the one best picture in 1974, right?
Oh, damn.
So you got Meryl Streep, Fredo, Robert De Niro, and Christopher Walken. All right, here's the premise. They're in Vietnam, and they come back. But when they're originally in Vietnam, the guys were POWs, and the Vietnamese guys make them play Russian roulette as, like, torture, right? The guys get freed from the POW, but one of the guys gets addicted to the adrenaline of doing the Russian roulette. So he fucking goes back to Vietnam just to do that.
Damn, that's crazy. Yeah,
that's the premise. That's the premise of the film. Yeah. I didn't tell you how it ends. I found out how it ends, and it's even freaking cooler. Now I even know how it ends. I still want to go see it.
So. Yeah, I got to go check it out. Yeah, and then Robert De Niro's in it. I showed Elaine the Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers series for the first time, like, last week, and she'd never seen that shit.
Oh,
I was like, how have you not seen this? Yeah, she was cracking up. She was like, this is hilarious. I'm like, yeah, you're late.
23 years.
All right. I never knew Robert De Niro could be so funny. I'm like, yeah, dude. It's fucking hilarious. You trip.
I think that's when he started being funny.
Yeah.
What about you? Any performances, Mallon?
Performances? I thought that Denzel Washington did pretty good as Malcolm X. I don't know. I feel like there's some seasons he was a little overdramatic. I felt like he looked silly as fuck whenever, like, they were getting sentenced for, like, the burglary and shit. And he was like...
Or Denzel Washington.
He did Denzel Washington. I just thought he looked silly. I don't know.
I thought he transformed a lot when he was just like... When he would do this jump? Was it this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the two fingers. It was a... Maybe I'm not doing it well. Oh, he doing it. Shoot, you ain't even trying to do it.
I thought it was good. It just seemed like he was a completely different person the first, half of the movie versus the second half. So it was kind of cool to see how he could kind of like do a good job of kind of mirroring like Malcolm X, like in the sense that like he could really well represent like how he matured throughout his life. So Denzel Washington's obviously like the biggest performer in here. So, you know, I thought he did a really good job, and was definitely one of the main reasons, like, I liked the film and, you know, kept me interested in it as long as the movie was. So.
All right. That's what about you, Tim? Yeah,
that's
cool. What about you, Tim?
Shit. I guess I mean, I said so much that I liked the first act, like where he was bad. I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking about the scenes that stuck out to me. It's more so like just because they're kind of my first introduction. I had to get a lot of explanation. I remember whenever like they're getting their hair conked and they're like in the chair, like, oh. I was like, what is going on there? And then I remember, like, there was an era where Ma was, like, curling our hair with S-curl shit. And I remember, like, oh, yeah, like, we still do that shit, which is crazy. That sticks out with me. I think whenever he first, like, meets the dude in prison who, like, kind of, like, gets him on the right path. And he's like, this is nutmeg. And, like, I guess that helps get him off of, like, his withdrawals from, like, drugs. That stuck out with me.
It's aardvark.
Yeah. This, I mean, honestly, like, the whole, like, death scene. Because, yeah, I had to, like.
That shit was intense. That was a good scene.
I was like. Get your head off my fucking. Yeah. That was, like, very, like. Graphic. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, there's other movies, like maybe Hollywood just thinks sex is worse than seeing death. Cause I'm like, there's other movies that are like way less graphic death wise than that have R rating. So I'm just like, how did this get a PG-13 rating? yeah. I mean, what else stood out? Like, me. Oh, yeah. I like the, like, whenever like they go to the jail to like get one of their brothers out and like they go as like a whole unit, that was cool. A shot that like sticks out to me is like the like trucking, the dolly shot of Malcolm like at the end where he's like, you know, it's like Spike's classic walking trucking shot. That one,
especially when he's got that hat on too, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Dad has a hat like that.
Yeah. I mean, so much. Like, I think there's something to that flashback scene of his mom when the KKK like comes and like sets a cross in their thing. That shit was scary as a kid. Yeah, those were ones that definitely stick out. I mean, you got to, like, if I'm thinking about somebody other than Denzel, who was like a standout actor in it. I'm trying to think, like, let me go back and look at this cast list again just to see who like really. I mean, I got to give it up for Al Freeman Jr. Like, I think Al Freeman Jr. plays Elijah Muhammad. And I think there's no way that, like, they didn't consider how much he looks like Elijah Muhammad as part of the casting. But he's also, like, an OG actor. You know what I mean?
He embodied him. You can say the same thing about Denzel and his, you know.
Yeah. I thought he did an excellent job of sounding and talking like him. Yeah. So, and I mean, it was just cool. Like, I mean, he was super old, like by the time, he died in 2012. So yeah, he was still a professor at Howard while I was there, but he was on his last leg because he was born in 1934. Yeah, I mean, Al Freeman, I'll give it up to him because I'm like, I like at a certain point, like I'd see, like, I want to look at a picture of Elijah Muhammad. Because I feel like there was a second where I was just like, maybe they just casted Elijah Muhammad. Yeah, I don't think that would work. Because Elijah Muhammad died in 1975. So, yeah. He would have been, he was born in 1897. So he would have been 100 by the time this movie came out. But yeah, man, give it up to him for acting. I don't know, like, there's a part of me that's like, I'm actually, for a second, I forgot that Angela Bassett was Betty Shabazz. I like this time when I was watching it, for some reason, because he's got like, but Malcolm X's first love interest, right, Laura, in it, like, you know, and she like tells him off. She's like, "I'm black," or like, "I'm not a white girl," and I'll give it up.
Yeah. He was like, "No." He's like, "I know what you're about to do." He's like, "I gotta work tomorrow morning. I'm tired."
Yeah. Right. So like, but I was
Grandma's
like,
looking right in the window, like,
right. And I'm like, and they kind of built it up and like kind of built up that relationship for a second. I was like, wait, is that like how he meets Betty Shabazz before they were? But like, that was just me forgetting the timeline. But they like I was like, oh, maybe she's gonna, maybe that's Betty, just young Betty, and she's struggling too. But then they cut to that one scene where they just see you. It's like they. She was a poor, innocent girl, and then like they cut to a scene of her like as a prostitute, like just straight up about to give a blowjob to some random white John. Which now I'm thinking, there's no way that was Goldberg. <'Cause>, I think it was like an old white dude, so I think that might have been some other Goldberg. But yeah, I don't know.
I
like her. Her name is Teresa Randall.
Yeah, she's Girl Six.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So she went on to be inside of another Spike Lee joint, which was, I honestly, that the sad thing is, like, I remember I was at an age where I remember seeing Girl Six in the theater, and Girl Six was like, I think the start of like Spike Lee's.
Yeah. It was like, no, that was like when we like, our family was like, it's a Spike movie. We see it in the movie theater, and then after that, we was like, we'll wait to catch it. Buster. Except for except for He Got Game. And we saw, and I literally remember us seeing He Got Game in the movie theater. And I remember being very pleased with that. Random, also in hindsight, He Got Game. I was like in high school, but like I was like the age of Jesus Shuttleworth at like the exact time that it was coming on out. I just now realized that He Got Game's great, and we're gonna review that. But anyways, I mean, I propose we do that.
Honestly, yeah, there's some other movies that, like, I forget that he did. Because it's like, I think it wasn't like an immediate, like, fall off. Like, it was like, all right, Girl Six, now all of his movies were bad. I think that, like, I think Girl Six was just, like, the first one where it was just, like, objectively bad.
Yeah. But like, he had a whole bunch of good ones after this, because he had Clockers after this.
Yeah, Clockers. That's the one I'm thinking of too. I'm like, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, he's had plenty. He had 25th Hour. Yeah. The weirdest thing is, I didn't see 25th Hour until like a couple years ago. I think it's great. Have you ever seen Ed Norton's in that?
The thing that I heard about the 25th Hour, though, I got to do more research on it, but like, I heard that like Ed Norton effectively directed 25th Hour. Like, he was like,
I can see that.
He didn't trust Spike or something, and like he just kind of took over. And a part of me is like, because I watched 25th Hour, and if you didn't tell me that that was a Spike Lee joint, I would be like, what?
He has his
other one, so
yeah, I can see that. And like comparing that to Inside Man, which is like a studio, which is not a Spike Lee joint.
Yeah,
Inside Man, in my opinion, has some things that I think has some unique Spike stuff. It has some Spike stuff to it.
Yeah.
Oh, for example,
mm-hmm.
The prison priest. Do you guys remember that when he was in prison and there's a white guy who was like the pastor, and Malcolm X gets up and was like, "Hey, I just want to let you know Jesus was black and I'm gonna prove it to you." Do you guys remember that scene? No? Dio? No?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a good scene.
So that pastor, I guess I should bring his name up, but that pastor was the father in The Sound of Music. He's like a famous actor. So
what?
And y'all both seen Inside Man, right?
Yeah, I've seen Inside Man. That shit goes.
Okay. He was a guy at the end of Inside Man when Denzel was like, "Hey, you got these gold bars from the Nazis?" He was that guy. So him and Denzel were also inside of, like, I don't know. Maybe I should pull up his name, but if you guys don't know that actor, he's like one of the most famous, well, old time actors and stuff. But, I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting, but if you don't,
hey, know the actor, Dan, Denzel's been in a lot of Spike Lee movies.
Yeah, man. Three. Yep.
Inside Man goes hard. That's another one we should consider.
Christopher Plummer. That guy's name is Christopher Plummer. Doesn't ring a bell at all?
Nope. No.
Okay. So, anyways, he was a bad guy in Inside Man. The whole thing about Inside Man is whatever. The guy was trying to hide stuff from, like, that he got from the Nazis. But if you haven't seen Inside Man in a while, it doesn't really ring a bell. But yeah, Christopher Plummer, he was a dad in Sound of Music. Have you ever seen Sound of Music?
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, any other performances to highlight, Theo?
No, I'm good.
Or any, what about performances or scenes that stick out? I got three random performances to bring on up while you just were talking about that.
Yeah.
I think it's random as hell. All right. So y'all familiar with the Mel Brooks movie, Young Frankenstein?
I'm familiar with it. I haven't seen it. I've probably only seen it once, and I've probably only seen it like 15 years ago.
All right. Everybody Loves Raymond. Are y'all familiar with that?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that's Ray's dad's Frankenstein, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now we're talking. So he's randomly the cop in that scene when they're getting the guy out of the hospital. I thought that was random. Maybe you guys didn't recognize that. I don't know if you guys recognize this, but are y'all familiar with, like, Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Marion? So, like,
nah, I'm not familiar with that shit. I know of it, but, like, I can't recall any actors other than Indiana.
So, I guess
Harrison Ford.
She was also in Animal House. What other movies was she in? I don't know. I guess I was talking about the actress who was like in the beginning, who was like, you can't take care of your kids. The white lady who was taking.
Oh, yeah.
She's in Animal House and she's in Indiana Jones. I forget her name in real life. Those are the main things I know her from. And maybe this doesn't ring a bell either, but have y'all ever seen the movie The Warriors?
Warriors.
I think I watched it with you.
That dude be in a bunch of Spike Lee shit too. He was in.
He was a teacher. Crookland.
Yeah,
he was a teacher Crookland. Who was like,
yeah, was hey. A teacher. And I feel like he was in another one too.
He was in Crookland. In Crookland,
yeah, but I feel like he was in another one. Like, I feel like he was in another one outside of Crookland too. But yeah, I definitely remember that dude.
No, so did you see him in this? Did you recognize him in this as a teacher?
Yeah, he was a teacher.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you shouldn't be a lawyer. How about you be a carpenter? So, all right, a few things that stick out to me when I rewatched it, I was like, Mike Lee in these motherfucking dance scenes. He gonna figure out how to get a fucking music scene. He's like, I don't give a shit. It is about Mel Brooks. We're gonna get a freaking music scene in this motherfucker, and I won't dance. So I was like, all right, cool. I thought the speeches were great. They thought at one point that they were going to have speeches in it, and Mike was like, all right, that's like having an Elvis movie without the Elvis songs, right? You got to have speeches in it. So, Pilgrimage to Mecca. I thought that was a pretty cool scene, visually, and just like from storytelling-wise as well. Something I didn't really know. And I think it's kind of relevant. I could make a real message and stuff. Sasha had this, like, as a nice white chick. What about the one chick? I don't know if y'all watched it, but she, like, walked up on. She was like, hey, just to let you know, I'd like to be able to help one out. And I'm not defined by, like, what my ancestors did. And I just want you to know, is there anything I can do to help one out? He was like, nope.
No.
Deuces. I mean, he was like, deuces.
Yeah, like, nope. That shit's memorable to me. I always remember that.
It's like, damn. He did it so smooth, too. It was like, what? Oh, God. So,
no.
I don't know. Something I think that was realistic, too. So I liked it sometimes, though. You can tell. I don't say, like, the Forrest Gump stuff. But I think you can tell that the recorded interviews, you can very much – oh, in my opinion, I can very much tell that Denzel very much studied the recorded interviews because he would have, like, some of the mannerisms and responses, like, down to a T. And you can tell it's just, like, in that same kind of, like, cadence – as, like, real Malcolm X. One response I liked in particular when they were saying is, like, I don't know. He was like, are you celebrating? No. Do you hate white people? Or are you? Or, and he was like, I didn't say that. I'm not celebrating. You said I celebrated, right? I don't know. It was just kind of like, he'd be very careful with his words and stuff. But then he'd be wilding them. Like, I feel like there was one thing Elijah Muhammad was like, bruh, you can't be out here talking about the assassinated president like that, bro. Like, everybody loves him, man. You're like, come on. Yeah, like, that's, I know we like black power, but like, dude, like, chill, man. The Harlem gangster stuff. I don't know. I just feel like there was like four or five different movies. There's like, all right, now I feel like Spike was like, all right, now we're going to do the whole gangster movie and stuff. And he's going to be hanging out here. And then, oh, when I've watched this movie a billion times. And for now, it's the first time I noticed that he was like, when, how did he get out of there? When Delroy Lindo walks on up and was like, yeah, we're going to kill you. He that, right? But he's like, that was Billie Holiday performing. That was supposed to be Billie Holiday performing. Because Denzel, or I'm sorry, Malcolm X was like, hey, can we let Billy stop performing? And the last scene I kind of had it sticking on out was this. I thought it was a really cool, interesting opening scene in two regards. One, the music, two, the visual that they had with, like, the burning. It started off with the United States flag that burned into the X. But then it was also over the Rodney King beatings, which was extremely prevalent at that time in 1992. And then like what he's saying over it and stuff. So I thought it was pretty interesting openings. Performances. I didn't have anybody else besides Denzel and Angela. I liked Angela Bassett, but Denzel.
I feel like Angela Bassett didn't have very much screen time.
No, she didn't really do much. Was it really much of a performance? Yeah. And that's what Roger Ebert said too. Roger
Ebert was like, "We're just giving because she's Angela Bassett." You know what I mean?
I think you know. I think so. You're right. I need to do better. I mean, come on. Who wants this movie? Okay, interesting fact. Not only did he do this for free, but and not only did he not get his Oscar nomination, right? But his screen time, which is 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I'm glad this is a fact because I feel like it just made sense now that I know it's a fact. He's the person that's been on the screen the most. I don't know how to say the record. Him being on screen for 2 hours and 20 minutes is the longest performance of someone being on screen to and then gain a nomination. Am I saying that right? Yeah. And that makes sense. 2 hours and 20 minutes, because one, it's a long ass movie. And that motherfucker is like, is there a scene with him not in it? I can't really think if there is one.
Right. Yeah, probably not.
I really can't think if there's not a scene with him in it. Like, yeah. Yeah, he's like in every scene.
Yeah, because there's no like behind the scenes shit where like the Nation of Islam is like plotting. Like, they don't really even show any shit like that. It's just like that. There's that one good time you're like, hey man, I was supposed to rig your car. That shit was supposed to blow up, but they didn't even like show that planning. He was in every scene.
Yeah,
Delroy Lindo had a good performance too.
So I remember when I was young, I was like, "So like, what happened to him? Like, did he just like get old and do too much?"
I think he was strung out, or you know, had.
Is that because I'm older? I'm like, did he just have a stroke? Because he was like, I don't even be bad about it. It's like, I got to exercise my arm. I was like, or nigga, is your arm dead? Because you had a stroke. But I guess he was strung out, I guess.
That's what I assumed.
One early draft of the screenplay featured Malcolm X's biographer Alex Haley as a character with the intent that Eddie Murphy would play Alex Haley. Well, that would be cool. Richard Pryor was briefly attached to star in the early production stages. Tracy Ellis Ross and Regina King both auditioned and didn't land roles.
They were young. They probably weren't as dope as they are now. Regina King.
So Last scenes I found pretty interesting is I liked his interview at Berkeley. I thought he'd go in. So, and I do feel you. I feel like I kind of like the first time I saw this when young, I'm like, all right, first one, that's a whole stuff. And then when it's just kind of like the second half, it's like, again, I'm young. He's talking about a whole bunch of heavy stuff. And it's 3 hours. Now, kind of, I feel like when you sit back and like, it's a rewatchable, in my opinion. One, I feel like you know that whole first half is like a whole one movie to itself. And then you got this whole second part. But the older I get, I kind of look forward to that second part a little bit more, especially I haven't read the book. So maybe I just need to kind of say close on that. But before you do thumbs up and thumbs down, I feel like kind of like an idiot. And dude, you inspired me a lot on my reading, on things that you do read in particular. But I love this movie. I watched this movie so many times and I've never read the book. So I think I need to read that. I'm going to be doing some driving back. This weekend, I'm driving back to Pinehurst for Uncle Pete's 85th birthday. And I'm gonna try to stop by the farm, and then possibly meet JR and Keon. I think I sent y'all a text, maybe going down to Myrtle Beach and stuff. So I'm gonna be on the road a little bit, but maybe that's something I could pop on in. I got some Audible credits.
Hell yeah, dude. Theo, you inspired me on my reading too, man. I didn't even know how to read before I knew you.
Yeah,
like literally, hooked on phonics.
I don't remember the last time I read a book, y'all. I'm a big Audible fan these days. But you know, it's cool. Maybe if I have
between reading, it's a difference. Yeah. All right, y'all ready for thumbs up, thumbs down?
Hell sure. Yeah.
I give this, I usually start going off. I give it 2 thumbs up. I love this movie. I think it's great storytelling, even though it's a little bit rushed up at the end. But I think it's a big story to tell. I think it's great, you know, Spike Lee spearheading this. But man, the performance, I feel like Denzel embodies Malcolm X in a lot of different areas too. Again, from him being a young gangster punk to him being in prison to him being Mr. Super Tough Guy with the roulette stuff. To him being on the come up, and being Mr. you know, Malcolm X, to him being kind of reformed, El Shabazz. I need to say his name the correct way and stuff, but I don't know. I just think it was great. I think, and again, I think it's this is also in the Library of Congress, so I think it's pretty interesting. This is like we've done like his first 5, right? She's gotta have it, do the right thing, and
one more button's on the jacket. Look good.
Yes, you are.
But you're missing something. Frisk me.
What?
Go ahead. Frisk me. Nothing, right? I'm still carrying. This is my first gun. How is yours? Thank you. You wear it. Wear it so. Small little bag.
Born on November 18th, 1952, in Eltham, London, Delroy Lindo is an influential actor whose outstanding career has made a significant impact on the world of entertainment. His journey into the realm of acting began with a deep passion for the performing arts and a steadfast commitment to mastering his craft. Delroy Lindo's entry into the entertainment industry as a person of color was a journey marked by determination and talent. He started his career in the theater, honing his acting skills through numerous stage productions. These early experiences demonstrated his unwavering commitment to the art of acting. His remarkable talent and compelling stage presence quickly attracted the attention of casting directors, opening the doors to the world of film and television. In 1976, Delroy Lindo made his film debut in the drama Find the Lady. This initial foray into the world of cinema foreshadowed his remarkable potential as an actor, marking the beginning of an impressive career. Since then, Delroy Lindo has consistently captivated both audiences and critics with his exceptional performances in a wide range of films. His roles in movies such as Get Shorty, The Cider House Rules, Clockers, and The Five Bloods exemplify his versatile acting range, seamlessly transitioning between dramatic, comedic, and thought-provoking roles. Beyond his magnetic on-screen presence, Delroy Lindo has also made significant contributions to the world of entertainment. His talents extend to directing, producing, and writing, showcasing his multifaceted abilities. His unwavering dedication to his craft and his ability to infuse depth and authenticity into his characters have solidified his status as a respected and influential figure in the industry. Join us as we pay tribute to the exceptional talent of Delroy Lindo and explore the diverse and impactful roles he has brought to the screen. From his early days on the stage to his current successes in film and television, Delroy Lindo's journey is a testament to the enduring power of passion, dedication, and extraordinary skill. That's a wrap for this episode. We invite you to join us for our upcoming episode of Cinematic Minds as we continue to explore the captivating world of entertainment through the lens of remarkable artists like Delroy Lindo, Spike Lee, and Denzel Washington. Thanks again. Peace.